Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the council call on the 19th of May. On the call, we have Jeff Newman, Jonathan Robinson, Ching Chiao. Adrian Kendris is absent, and he has a temporary alternate in Mason Cole, who is on the call. Tim Ruiz. Stefan van Gelder, the chair, is absent, and his proxy is given to Tim Ruiz. Andrei Koleshnikov. Zaid Jamil. John Berard is absent, and he has given his proxy to Zaid Jamil. Christina Rosette is absent, and Brian Winterfeld has been appointed as the temporary alternate for her, but he is not on the call yet as far as I know, and he holds the proxy for David Taylor, who is also absent and will not be on the call. Wolf Ulrich Knoben is on the call, Jamie Wagner, Rafik Damek, William Drake, Deborah Hughes. Wendy Seltzer has not yet joined the call. Rosemary Sinclair has given her proxy to Debbie Hughes. Mary Wong. Olga Cavelli. And Carlos Aguirre. Alan Greenberg, the ALAC liaison. And for staff, we have Rob Hogarth, Alexander Kulik, Margie Milam, David Klassen from IT, Marika Kornix, and David Pragnell from IT too. Thank you, Jeff. Have I left anybody off? Liz Gastein, sorry, we have Liz on the line.
Indeed.
Sorry, Liz. Thank you, Jeff. Over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Glenn. And as you heard, Stefan is not able to be with us today, so I'm taking over as chair just for this meeting. And just one procedural question, Glenn, just to double check and make sure everything's good with the rules. You had said that Brian Winterfeld is the alternate for Christina Rosette, and then Brian's also holding a proxy for David Taylor. That is in compliance with the rules that an alternate can hold a proxy. I just want to double check.
I believe it is, but I will ask Rob and Liz to confirm.
Okay. And Margie, you have your hand raised. So.
Oh, yeah, if you don't mind, I'll confirm. This is Margie. We took a look at that yesterday to make sure it was okay, and we walked, Rob and I walked through the rules, and we're comfortable that that's fine.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I just wanted to double-check that so that if there is a vote on the one motion that we're covered. And just a reminder that we need a quorum at both the start of a meeting as well as before the vote. So it sounds like with the alternates we have, we do have a quorum, and so hopefully everyone stays on at least until the hopefully everyone stays on during the entire call. I'll leave it at that. Okay, so we received updated statements of interest from Bill Drake and John Berard. Those are currently available on the links that are up, the agenda is up on Adobe. It's also up on our community Confluence site. Does anyone have anything, any questions, or anything to add to the agenda? Okay. And for those that are not on Adobe, just speak up if you want to be called on. Okay, moving to the next item is just a note on the minutes that the minutes have been published for the April 28th council meeting, and unless we get any comments or any objections, those minutes will automatically be approved May 20th, which is tomorrow. So if you have any questions or comments on those minutes, please make sure you get them in. All right, with that said, let's go to item number two. Which is an update.
Sorry, this is Glenn. Just to say that Brian Winterfeld is on the line now.
Great. Well, welcome, Brian. And just to remind you, you are the alternate for Christina, and you hold the proxy for David. So welcome to the call.
Thank you.
We are just starting agenda item number two, which is pending projects. And I'm going to turn it over to Rob to give an update on reconfirmations and review of stakeholder group charters. So, Rob?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item, and it won't take 15 minutes, but I do want to provide some background and an update for you all. I also understand, Jeff, that there's a decision to be made at some point whether to keep this item on the pending projects list, so I'll leave that to the council to decide in due course. This item is one of the progeny of the GNSO improvements efforts that is still outstanding, but one that is seeming to be in wrap-up mode. Many of you will recall that in July of 2009, the board approved four stakeholder group charters, two on the contract party side for the registries and registrars, and two on the non-contract party side for the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group. The difference between the two houses in this instance, however, was that the CSG and NCSG charters were approved as temporary slash transitional charters, and the board asked those two communities to work on separate timetables to establish permanent charters. The commercial stakeholders group had a year to put one together. The NCSG had 2 years, and both of those communities, many of you have participated in those efforts, have brought both of those initiatives to fruition. The CSG charter, I believe, was ratified last October, November, was subject to a public comment form and is currently ready for the board to approve. The second, the NCSG charter, has also been ratified. There was also, I think, a number of conversations between NCSG leadership and members of the Structural Improvements Committee of the board, and that resulted in putting that charter on public notice just a couple of weeks ago. And the NCSG charter is open for community review and comments through June 5. So that's an open proceeding right now that folks will have an opportunity to comment on for another couple of weeks. The timetable for both of those charters, as I understand it, in terms of the interest on the part of certainly members of the SIC, the Structural Improvements Committee, is that there may be some activity that takes place in Singapore to resolve those charters from the board's perspective. Now, there's another string running through this that impacts the constituency reconfirmations, and that is prior to the approval of the SG charters back in July of 2009, the original board timetable was essentially this. It was stakeholder group charters resolved, constituency charters reconfirmed, and then the council being restructured. As you all know, the board adopted a somewhat different timetable in that they approved the SG charters in July of 2009. In October of 2009 in Seoul at the annual general meeting, the new GNSO council was seated. And because the SG charters, particularly on the non-contract party side, were still in transition mode, the board essentially kept putting off the constituency reconfirmations. And part of the logic of that was that until the SG charters were resolved, it was, you know, really not useful from the perspective of the board's timetable to jump ahead and confirm or reconfirm the existing constituencies. And so that's been an item that continues to be put on hold. Another factor was that at the annual general meeting in 2009 in Seoul, there was a change in leadership in the SIC. And at this point, if you look at the membership of the SIC in 2011 compared to 2009, there's really only one holdover member who was there at the time of the original charter approvals. And so the new SIC essentially looked at a number of different factors with respect to GNSO improvements and actually about a year ago decided to do its own internal reset. You'll recall that another aspect of the GNSO improvements effort was the desire on the part of the board to encourage new constituencies to come forward. And procedures were developed, and we've had five different communities formally come forward and ask for board approval. As part of that effort, the SIC was a little disappointed, number one, in terms of the process that the board had used to move forward in evaluating the charters. They were concerned with the timetables, and they really wanted to develop some more objective criteria for reviewing and analyzing new constituencies. So on this additional tangent that the SIC developed, they said, let's go back, look at the new constituency recognition process that's currently in existence and find ways to improve it. Until we do that, let's hold off on reconfirming the existing constituencies. And so essentially we've had this key gating factor, which is resolution by the board of the new constituency recognition process before the board wanted to proceed with reconfirming the existing constituency charters. Now, let me pause there and pull one last thread for those of you who haven't been involved in this marathon improvements process for the past 2.5, 3 years. And that is the additional string in all of this, as you know, is that with a new GNSO council structure, we've had a whole raft of new GNSO procedures that various work teams and the new standing committee are continuing to take a look at that are continuing to evolve. All those pieces have, in many respects, required the individual constituencies and even the stakeholder groups to sort of look back at their procedures and make modifications. So throughout this timetable, a number of the communities have been engaged in discussions and have continued to update their charter documents. Some of them individually, some of them in partnership with those of us on staff providing advice and counsel and the rest. So there has been activity that many of you may be aware of in your own communities where there have been discussions about updating the charters of the constituencies, updating the charters of the stakeholder groups. That work continues. But at some point in time, probably in the next year, the board will, I believe, turn to, you know, making proactive decision that says, we are now reviewing the constituency charters and we are reconfirming your constituency. That will still likely happen, but the timetable, as you all know, has been pushed off month after month, and now it's, you know, literally not going to happen until after the stakeholder group charters are actually approved and the new constituency recognition process is completed. So that's the overall background and sort of look ahead. In terms of what's immediately going to happen next as we look towards Singapore, I would expect that based upon the resolutions that the board passed in San Francisco, that in Singapore there will be board consideration of the new constituency recognition process. A number of your communities commented on that, and the SIC has been in discussions about how to adjust that process in light of some of those comments. Also, by way of timing, the CSG and NCSG charters will be eligible, with the NCSG charter coming off public notice, for board review and action. Whether that takes place or not is not clear to me yet, the timing and all the preceding sort of foundational work will have been completed, so that's possible in a potential discussion matter and decision matter in Singapore. And then third, as you know, there are two still existing new constituency proposals that the board has not ruled on yet. Those two formal proposals came from the consumers constituency proponents and from the not-for-profit organizational concerns community proponents. There may be board action on one or both of those proposals in Singapore as well. I'm not as confident of that as I am of the other two being decided, but there will certainly be some discussions, I think, among the board once they're done with their new GTLD decisions in Singapore about those issues. One final piece of all this puzzle is that within the new constituency recognition process, the board has been looking at new objective criteria as part of that process for future review and evaluation of all the charters for stakeholder groups and constituencies. And for those of you who participate in that process, you are familiar with some of those individual criteria. What the SIC has expressed an interest in doing is looking forward to the next GNSO review and nailing down some real objective criteria that can be used by the independent reviewers, by members of the ICANN community to, in the future, evaluate the structure and operations of the stakeholder groups and constituencies in the GNSO. So what's likely to happen over the next 6 to 8 months is some additional board action on those criteria. I would expect, with my crystal ball, that the board would resolve those objective criteria and then apply those for reconfirmation of existing constituencies. So that's the other piece that's sitting out there. Just as a final sort of wrap-up of all this, how does this impact you all on a day-to-day basis? Very little, I believe. Unless you are a proponent of a new constituency, the existing constituencies are not under any deadline or timetable or expiration date. The purpose of reconfirming constituencies was just a recognition, I think, on the part of many board members to say it's important while we review the GNSO as a whole, that we also look at some of the subgroups as well. So I think that will be something that will continue to be of importance, but from a practical standpoint, isn't going to affect the existence of or continuing operations of the constituencies at this time. And I'll stop there, Jeff, and invite any questions.
Thanks, Rob. And as you pointed out at the beginning, this is an action item that we have on every one of our agendas, which is to try to go over what are listed as pending projects for the council and to figure out how to move those forward or even in a lot of cases wrap them up. And as you said, I'm not sure that this is really an issue for the council anymore, at least up until the next review. So, and I encourage everyone to actually read the pending projects list, which is updated every few weeks, and thanks to Glenn and ICANN staff for all the work that they do on updating that list. I really encourage everyone to read that, and if there's anything on there, especially at a time now when we're reviewing things like the budget and other documents that ICANN's putting out, you know, all of this and all of these activities go towards what the policy staff is working on and what we need to work on. With that said, is there any questions? All right, Wolf has a question. So, Wolf?
Yes, Wolf Coleman speaking. Thank you. I have one question to Rob. To this last point you mentioned, the development of objective criteria for constituency review for general one. But I would like to understand the process, how it is going to be done. Is that within the normal ICANN process with this public comment and so on to be done? And the second question is with regards to the next GNSO review. If I recall correctly, that's already should be done next year, and that's very, if that is the case, that's very close, also because we almost haven't finished the first one. So I'm thinking about, you know, whether this is feasible, and is this, may this be under discussion also between staff and board, or between staff and the community, whether this time schedule is feasible or not. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf. I'll answer the questions in turn. First, in terms of public comment or sort of what the review process would be, the precedent is that there would be an opportunity for community review and comment of the existing charters prior to the board making any reconfirmation decision. In fact, for those of you who were around at the time, there was already an initial review period for the existing charters, and there was some community comment. The board ended up postponing its reconfirmation process for all the background reasons I gave you. But, yes, there would clearly be, likely be, I'll say, a process in which, you know, the charters would be posted and there'd be a public comment period and opportunity for folks to react. I think the entire purpose of the exercise on the part of the board members who initially introduced it was to have that dialogue and just, you know, do that review and double check to make sure that the folks who were participating in all these groups were comfortable that they were running smoothly, because those are the people that would understand the processes best and how they were being implemented. In terms of the second process, the timing of the reviews is something that's had some discussion. I think there are two schools of thought on that. One, quite unpopular and in a decided minority, is that, you know, yes, there's a timetable. The last one started 3 years ago, and the next one should start pretty soon. Some of you may recall, and I think it was Mexico City, where the board changed the timetable for reviews from every 3 years to every 5 years of the SOs and ACs. The second more popular point of view is that you shouldn't start another review cycle until you've finished the previous one. And while this GNSO review process, because it's been so comprehensive, has taken a considerable period of time, it's not been like the ESSAC review, which was fairly quick and manageable in terms of time frame and in terms of the specifics. So I would expect, and clearly it's the view of a number of influential folks, that the new timetable shouldn't start until the existing review is done. What's the right date for that? I don't know. Has that date already passed? Was it the restructuring of the GNSO Council? I don't know, and quite frankly, I think that folks won't really focus on that until after the draft applicant guidebook is finalized and concluded, but that may be some discussions that can take place over the next couple of months. I would expect that, you know, to the extent board members are looking at that timetable, that they'll ask the GNSO Council and other leaders within the GNSO what they think the timetable should be.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Thank you, Rob. Let me go to Mary.
Thanks, Jeff, and this will be real quick. It's just a point of clarification because, as Rob mentioned, this has been quite a marathon process of a lot of moving parts. So I just didn't want anyone else on the council who's listening who hasn't been following the marathon as closely as some of us to know that the 2 years in the NCSG charter, a lot of it was really because of the moving parts, the fact that there are constituencies in formation and the fact that the SIC or the SIC has been working very closely with us and our leadership to try to design a charter that works with all the moving parts, and that was really challenging. But we're really hopeful that with the charter now out for public comment that we can close that chapter, get it off the pending projects list, and move ahead. Thanks.
And Mary, this is Rob. I would observe that the NCSG was ahead of schedule.
Thanks, Rob. That's much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rob. And just a reminder that that comment period, I just looked it up, closes on June 5th. So if you have any comments, I think Wolf has submitted comments, but I'm not sure anyone else has. So if you want to submit comments, please do so by that time so we can put this behind us. With that said, I'd like to move on to item number three, which is the joint SOAC working group on new GTLD applicant support. And we do have a motion, and the motion can be found at that link, which I think we'll probably want to be put up on Adobe. And before we actually can get to the motion, though, we have not been able to locate a second for the motion. The motion was made by Rafiq. So if I could have I think we have a second now. I'm seeing it typed as we see it. So, Andre, you seconded the motion?
Yes, I did.
Okay, great. Well, that takes care of that part. So with that said, why don't we have we'll start with Rafiq reading the motion, and then we'll have a discussion and potential vote. Let me see if there's a lot of whereas clauses. Would anyone object to the just going straight to reading the resolve clauses? Okay, Rafiq, are you on?
Yes.
Great. Can you read the motion from the from where it says resolve?
So form resolved. Okay. The GNSO Council thanks the members of the joint SOAC working group for its effort and its dedication to completing the work on such tight schedule. And the GNSO Council requests that the report to put out for community review as soon as possible. The GNSO Council approves forwarding the second GIS milestone report to the ICANN board for review and approval. And the GNSO Council requests ICANN staff begin working on implementation of the recommendation pending board approval, and the GIS working group continues working to deal with any issues that may arise in the upcoming review by the community, the board, and from the staff in the process of implementing the proposal, and that the GIS working group publish their final report after this review process. resolved further that the GNSO Council instructs the GNSO Chair to communicate his decision to ALAC Chair.
Okay, thank you, Rafiq. And I just want to point out there's been a lot of discussion on the list about a letter. I'm going to put that discussion off until after we finish the discussion on this resolution, because if this resolution is passed, and I think, and unless anyone disagrees, but if this motion passes, then it seems like sending a letter would be moot. So, you know, let's have a discussion on this motion. So if there's a queue or if anyone wants to speak. Okay, I see Jonathan in the queue.
Jeff, as you'll be aware, there's been a series of questions raised, and there's been a fairly comprehensive response. But as I, within the registry stakeholder group, as I understand it, the full response is not yet complete. I think it's being finalised by tomorrow. So for that reason, and the reason that we've had, we haven't really had a chance to finalise a position within the stakeholder group, I'd suggest that, I'd propose that we defer a vote on this until the next council meeting.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. And as everyone knows, we do have a practice within the council that if one councillor makes a request to table the motion, that's what will be done. But I do think that, you know, given the timing and everything else, I do think we should continue on with the discussion to the extent that there are answers that can be given during this call. And, you know, with the understanding that we'll push the vote off one meeting. But let's go to Rafiq. I have Rafiq, Andre, and Ching in the queue. So, Rafiq?
I want to have clarification. Is Jonathan saying that he didn't receive the answer to the registry stakeholder group's questions? Because I sent it, I forwarded the answer today to the mailing list just to check. And also I want to say that it will be helpful if we to have some discussion and to find a compromise, because I think this working group is important for the community, and it's, the GNSO Council should send a real good signal to the community that it's really take care about such issues. Thanks.
Jeff, yes, shall I respond? Would it be helpful if I respond?
Sure, yes. Jonathan, please respond, and then I'll go to Andre.
I'll be brief. First of all, thank you for not letting what I said curb the discussion. I think it's very helpful to have the discussion now, so I appreciate the opportunity to continue with that in any event. Yes, Rafiq, it has been received, but it's pretty tight. We haven't had any opportunity. I've been traveling. I've just literally arrived back in London from San Francisco an hour or two ago. On the stakeholder group mailing list, we have received the answers, but there hasn't been any opportunity to discuss it. So the answers are appreciated, but as far as I am aware, they may not be complete, but even if they are, we haven't had a chance to discuss or review those. So thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Let me go to Andre and then Ching.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll be sure. I really believe that this working group is very, very important, one of the most critical things these days. And as I said in my previous message in the email, that there will be decision about the JAS, and I really believe that the active participation in the matters, discussing the matters of this, of the content of this proposed group, is very important for the GNSO. And I just would like to emphasize and to ask councillors to, you know, to get into the details of what is written, because there are, I mean, the group did significant work, and we can see there are some real proposals, real algorithmic things behind the content, of this group. So I just want to ask councillors to move into the discussion about what really was achieved for this intermediate report. Thank you.
Thanks, Andre, and I will echo the comments you've made as far as I think that the discussion should happen online, and to the extent that there are any questions, that they should be submitted to, and Rafiq is obviously on the council and on the list, and he has been, I know, forwarding the questions that he's received over to the JAS, the JAS group, and that they've been working as fast as they can to address. Let me go to Ching.
Thank you, Jeff. And this is Ching. And first of all, I would like to really to thank the JAS working group. And personally, I really like to see this being moved forward to being incorporated to the new GTOD, the applicant, the next version of the applicant guidebook, given the community in Asia that we are serving, but also echo what Andrew just mentioned is that we are, as a registry operator, and to be specific, the registry stakeholder groups are actually really looking into those answers and working on finding a concrete reply to probably what's needed the most for the JAS working group in terms of, for example, for those areas of interest, personal interest, such as the IDN part and also the implementation of supporting IPv6 and those type of issues, actually the registry stakeholder groups are actually looking at. So I would also support what my colleague Jonathan just mentioned, is that we need more time. The reply from the JAS working group is very much appreciated, but it came in about 24 hours, and the stakeholder groups members really need time to look at it and to discuss in more detail something really concrete to reply to the working group. So I would support that if we can postpone this motion to the next meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Ching. Is there any other comments on this from the council? Okay. Let me bring up the issue then that's been discussed on the mailing list, which is the sending of a letter to the board. Stefan had sent around an email earlier, I believe it was earlier today, or actually it might have been yesterday, sorry, about a potential letter to the board with two different options or two different versions, I should say, of what to say. Both the beginning part of both of them is pretty much the same. I think the only difference is whether to include a statement on the charter, the observance of the chartering GNSO chartering process. I believe that's the only difference between the two versions. There have been some counselors that have weighed in online on this subject. I will note it's probably, with the people that have weighed in, it's pretty much even. And thank you for posting this up on Adobe. So at this point, we need to decide whether to send a note, a letter to the board, and if so, which of those two versions should be sent. Is there any comments on this? Okay, Mary?
Thanks, Jeff. So as the person who sort of tried to help tweak the note to make it acceptable, and assuming that we're sending the note, I guess my question is whether or why the last sentence is so objectionable. Is it the sentiment that it expresses, or is it the way the sentiment is expressed? Because like I asked on the list, I don't think that anybody is saying that the group and Rafiq and Khan did not follow our chartering process. In fact, from the timeline that Alan gave us, it's pretty clear that they did. And I just wanted to add that to the letter because I didn't want anybody in the community And I know that there are some people in the community who are confused as to who forwarded what and when, and I don't think it would be fair to the group if we did not note that they did follow the process that we charted them to do.
Okay, thank you, Mary. And if I may, I'm going to take off my chair hat for a second, and since I'm the one who, or one of the ones who raised the issue, and the primary reason I did was that when you make a statement about whether someone observed or didn't observe the process, it kind of implies that there's been sort of an investigation into that process, and I'm not sure the GNSO Council has ever actually done that. Not that I think it necessitates an investigation here, but first thing is I'm not sure it adds to the note or not, so I appreciate your comment that there's some people in the community that are concerned. But second of all, really we're only talking about one aspect of the charter, which is when and how it's forwarded to the board, or actually whether it's forwarded to the stakeholder group, or to the GNSO. So my objection to that was, A, that I didn't think it was needed, it didn't really add any substance for the board, and B, there was, you know, I'm not sure we can make a sweeping statement as to whether this group observed the charter, as there was never any kind of investigation into it. Again, not saying that there needed to be one, but it just seemed like a statement that was made.
Hey, can I respond before you go to Tim, though, Jeff?
Yeah, let me go back. Yeah, so I'll put my chair hat back on, and yes, Mary, please, and then I'll go to Tim.
Yeah, it's a bit confusing, doesn't it? And I appreciate that, and I understand it. So, and I get what you're saying. So my suggestion would be, because of some confusion in the community, maybe we could amend that sentence to just say that, that we would like to thank them for observing the timeline for submitting the report by doing so simultaneously both to GNSO and ALAC. If that would alleviate some of the concerns that you and others have expressed.
Okay, let me go to Tim.
Thanks. Yeah, I guess, you know, I raised the issue about the comment on the chartering process as well, and had some of the same concerns as Jeff, but also because I guess I'm not convinced we really had a well-defined chartering process for these types of working groups. We kind of winged it, actually, to try to come up with something, and we didn't even come up with anything that was agreeable between the two chartering organizations. So again, without, you know, further looking into things, I mean, we don't, you know, to make this kind of sweeping statement, I think is out of order. And it really, that's not what this note is about. I thought this note was about the fact that the council hasn't yet had a chance to, you know, really consider this and make its recommendations or whatever. And that's what we wanted to try to get across to the board. So what this last sentence, what purpose it really serves, I don't know. It seems to go off in a different direction that isn't necessary right now in order to get our point across to the board. And it's more like something that should be a part of the motion when we finally get there, you know, thanking the working group and whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I don't see the point of that in this particular note. You know, let's just get to the point, send the note off, and be done with it. And in fact, as I said before, I think that it's actually would be better if Stefan, as chair, just sent the note. We don't need council approval, and just stated the fact and leave these kinds of comments of opinion and things out of here. We wouldn't be having these long, protracted discussions about whether to send a simple note that said, well, we haven't had a chance to consider and vote on it yet. That's all that really needs to be said. No council approval is necessary. Stefan can do that himself in his role as chair. That's what I would suggest. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. We have a queue now, so I'll go to Andre, then Mary, then Alan. So, Andre.
Thank you very much. I just, you know, I really missed it. I mean, why we should approve some versions of the letter to the board. I mean, it's just a separate subject. You know, there's a problem in communication between the constituencies and between, you know, different stakeholders, et cetera, et cetera. Why sending a, I mean, why what we're trying to approve? I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Okay.
Stefan can send a short email message saying, you know, we got this report. We haven't discussed it yet. We didn't finish it. period. I mean, we just, it's just a week we're discussing this matter. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Andre. Mary?
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Andre. I guess, you know, that whole thing was just because there was disagreement about not just whether to send it, but what it should say. And I know somebody did ask for a vote, so here we are. On Tim's point about the facts, like I said, I'm happy to look at amending the last sentence, and I've sent something to Adobe along that line, and I'm happy for people to change it. I do think, and I think a number of you know, that there is some misunderstanding in the community about who sent the report and when it was done. And so I do think if we are going to send a note, that it may be made very clear that we at least know, and it is a fact, that the working group at least observed the timeline and did send the report simultaneously to both of the chartering organizations. And so I do think it's important if we send the note to make that fact clear in that note to avoid further misunderstanding in the GNSO community.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Let me go to Alan, and then I put myself in the queue. So, Alan.
Okay. Thank you. 2 points. The phrase chartering process in the in Mary's statement was interpreted two different ways. I thought she meant it as the processes outlined in the charter. Tim's comment refers to the process that the GNSO and ALAC have of creating charters, and I think those are two different things, so maybe a wording change fixes that. I, for one, was happy to see the second statement in Mary's proposal, because there were very strong statements made on the council list that both the working group and the ALAC did not follow the processes outlined in the charter, and those messages got, you know, leaked out way past the GNSO and were known in the community to, by other people, and I think putting that statement in the in a letter to the board or a note to the board clarifies the fact that there were no infractions of the process as approved, which was very strongly said in a number of documents, including very public ones. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. One actual, so I put myself in the queue again, not as as chair, but just a comment. Since we've moved to defer the vote until our next meeting, which is June, I believe June 9th, it might be good to update the board in this letter. Instead of saying provide our advice and recommendations as soon as possible, what do people think about saying that we hope to provide the board with our advice and recommendations on June or something around our June 9th meeting to give them a date to let them know when we intend to vote on this. I just think that might be a good idea to let the board know that this will be on our agenda for a vote on June 9th. So I want to throw that out there and get people's thoughts on that, as I think that would be helpful and instructive to the board. It's not just saying we haven't had a chance to review it yet. It's now telling the board definitively we will give you advice by at our June 9th meeting. Rafiq?
Thanks. I just want to maybe to reply to Tim about that issue of chartering process. It's more that the JAS working group followed the charter as approved by the ALAC and the GNSO, which asked in one of the items that we sent and to communicate only with our chartering organization. We did that when we finally released the report. I sent it to the ALAC chair and GNSO chair. And that's all. But we have some misunderstanding in the GNSO Council, and as Mary said, that leaked to outside the GNSO, and there is some misunderstanding in the community. So it will be helpful to correct and to fix that. Thanks.
Okay. Tim?
Yeah, you know, I think it's unfortunate that there's any misunderstanding. The whole point, the whole reason this got brought up was to simply inform the board that, you know, we just got the report, we haven't had a chance to consider it, you know, but we're working on it or whatever. And this has gotten way blown out into other things. Maybe people have said things they shouldn't have said or whatever, but now we're all trying to correct all the things that somebody else said on the list that didn't really apply to what we intended to say in the first place. But I guess at this point, it just seems to me that there really isn't going to be any agreement. It was kind of split on this letter whether to include the last sentence or not. I don't know how much longer we want to sit here and debate this, or maybe spend this time more productive. Just forget the letter. Spend this time more productively, actually considering the content of the report, and so that we can make some take some sort of action down the road. And that's my suggestion. Let's just forget this and move on.
Thanks, Tim. Jonathan?
Hi, Jeff. I mean, I suppose my sentiments are quite strongly with Tim. And if it doesn't sound like a complete contradiction, somehow I'd like to both support Tim in the sentiment that actually we need to move on, and if we do something, keep it simple. So it seems that there's been a lot of effort put into this, and there was quite a strong feeling that a letter should go off of some sort. So to drop it now is difficult, but I'm sorry, I'm probably saying two things, but I'm probably a little jet-lagged. I'm coming across unclearly, but my sentiments are with Tim. That said, we've put enough effort into this that we should probably get off as simple a letter as we can all agree to.
Okay, with all of that said and a desire to move this forward, I'm going to ask for a vote on, and here's what the vote will be on. It will be on the substituting Mary's language in for the, it's option A, substituting the sentence that Mary had added on Adobe. And so I don't know if someone from ICANN staff can update that. Okay, so it's being updated as we speak. And then the only other thing I would ask to be added to it, if people are okay, instead of saying as soon as possible in the sentence before that, with saying with our advice and recommendations on or around June 9th, 2011. I don't know if that's controversial or not. I'm hoping not. That's when our next meeting is. So with that said, I guess if someone can make that motion, I guess, to vote on that, that would be great.
I don't have a problem with that, Jeff. I mean, why are we – I'm not sure that this is even fair to those counselors who aren't here, that we haven't had to discuss any of this with. We haven't discussed it with our stakeholder groups, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're going to make a change on something that we didn't have any clue we were going to be making a formal motion and voting on.
I think that's a fair point, Tim. I'm just trying to find a way forward with this.
With us, it just seemed like it was a split vote on the email list, so we thought it was a dead issue. But no.
Okay, well, so, all right, help me move this forward because I do think it's helpful to let the board know that we will be considering this on our June 9th meeting. I'm not even sure that requires a vote. So, and we do need to move on. So I think if there's any other suggestions here, I'd still like to have a letter sent. I still think Stefan wants to send a letter. But I think it makes us look like we're not.
Can I make the suggestion that let Stefan look at these things, let him decide what he wants to pull together, and send off the note as chair? I mean, I don't see anything being said here that's, you know, an outright, you know, issue as far as, you know, somebody's opinion or anything of that nature other than the, now that we've got Mary's revised text with the other, and just let Stefan decide what he wants to put out there.
Okay.
That's the last thing I'll say about it, Jeff. If you still want to have a vote, that's fine, but I just think, you know, Jeff should just make a decision as chair.
Okay.
Just make a decision as chair and go.
All right. Thank you, Tim. So let me – it seems like there's a lot of people on there. I know Bill has said something on the list. In the interest of moving on, let me just ask the question. Is there anyone that's uncomfortable with Tim's suggestion of forwarding or basically giving our thoughts to Stefan as we discussed on this call and then letting him make the call as chair of what – if to send something to the board and what to send, provided it's within the parameters that we've discussed. So on that topic alone, Jonathan and Bill?
Yeah, Stefan, Jeff, thank you. I was going to speak in support broadly of what Tim was saying. I mean, from my perspective, I mean, the key is to get to get a message to the board. Whether it has full council endorsement and formal voting is probably not that important. We're going to work our way through this in any event. So I think getting the point across and giving Stefan the sentiment that this is where we've got to would have my support. So I guess I'm with Tim on this.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. And Bill?
You know, the notion of just having Stefan do it, I'm not quite so comfortable with that. I mean, we got here because of concerns about the way the original message on May 10th was worded. You know, we've been spending all this time since then because of that. So I think to then turn around and say, after all of this, we'll turn around and just kick it back, and that doesn't work for me. I would say either just we drop the letter and just go forward, or else we proceed in a more structured way where everybody's view is taken into account. But I would not do this unilaterally given the process we've been through over the last few weeks with this.
What about if, Bill, just to address that, if we say as long as the leadership of the council, which would include Mary and myself, are comfortable with the letter so that we can get it, so it's something that we believe is consistent with what the council has discussed, would that be okay for you, Bill?
Not particularly. I think it's when you do something that engenders dissension in the community, you don't resolve it by saying we'll take it away from the community and do an end run of any sort. So no, that doesn't work for me.
Okay, well, I'm going to have Olga speak, and then we have to move on. We'll continue the discussion online and see if we can come up with something that we can all live with. But let me go to Olga, and then we'll close it out.
Thank you, Jeff. Just to be brief, I support what Bill said.
Okay. Thank you, Olga. So I'm going to move on to the next item. We will finish this topic online and hopefully find something. I do think, though, that the board should know that the result of what happened today, namely that this has been moved over to the next, it was tabled and moved to our next meeting on June 9th, so that they are aware of that, because I do believe that there will be another version, hopefully final version, of the applicant guidebook on May 30th. So with that said, let's move on to item 4, which is the registration abuse. And if we have an update from Marika first on that, and then a discussion about next steps. So, Marika?
Yes, thank you, Jeff. This is Marika. So up on the screen, you'll find an overview of the registration abuse policies working group recommendations, basically all of them that were in the final report and regrouped in the order that the drafting team proposed. I think if you look at those, you can basically distinguish four different categories of recommendations. There's one group of recommendations which the council has already acted upon. One of them is the UDRP issue report, and we'll talk more about that later in this call. There's also the best practices paper. To give you a quick update on that, staff is working on that paper and hopes to release a preliminary version of that paper in time for the meeting in Singapore, and is planning to schedule a workshop in Singapore to discuss the paper and get further community input prior to finalizing that paper for submission to the council. Then there's a second category of recommendations for which the council has requested input from compliance staff. There was one on who is accessed, and one on fake renewal notices. The council did receive that information. There was a discussion in San Francisco with compliance staff, and I guess now it's for council to consider whether there are any next steps in relation to the information provided, or whether, you know, the information provided is sufficient and no further steps need to be taken. On one of those, there is actually a conditional recommendation in relation to fake renewal notices. So that should be considered in that context as well. Then there's a group of recommendations that the council has not considered at all, apart from, you know, the presentation and a general discussion, but not in detail. And it's probably worth pointing out that some of those recommendations did not receive the consensus of the Registration Abuse Working Group. So there are some recommendations in there that either have a strong support, significant opposition, or either a half split support. And you can see that in the second column of the document. And then there's a fourth category in which I think there's only one recommendation where the Registration Abuse Working Group actually recommends that no further action is required, which presumably means that the council doesn't need to take any action on that unless there are any reasons why councils would believe that it should be further considered. So I think that's a bit the overview of the recommendations, and I guess it's for the council to consider how you would like to deal with those recommendations, and I guess especially those that haven't been considered yet.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Marika. Are there any comments on this? So we're going to address the UDRP one a little bit later on today, or in a little bit. And just, Marika, you said the paper on best practices you think will be ready for Singapore?
Yes, I'm hoping so. We have a draft. We're having an internal review. So if all goes well and we don't identify any major issues, we hope to publish that by the publication deadline for Singapore.
Okay, thanks, Marika. Any comments or questions on this? I know that we're going to discuss this subject at the Singapore meeting as well, right? I believe, Mary, that we put that on the agenda?
On the weekend sessions, there's specific sessions for the UDRP issue and the best practices paper. I don't believe that we have a specific session for the remaining things, but that doesn't mean we can't discuss them. A lot of it will depend on the feedback that Marika has requested from fellow councillors as to the remaining items.
Okay, so everyone should think about that. And one of the issues to think about is what we as a council do with areas that didn't have a full or unanimous consensus but just had a rough consensus as to whether we want to do anything further. So we still have all this on our agenda and the pending projects list, and at some point we need to decide what, if anything, we want to do. Let me go to Tim.
Yeah, I guess I might not have been paying close enough attention. I was just curious about what the best practices paper was again. Is this in response to the malicious use of domain names recommendation one? Is that?
Yes, that's correct.
To that or something else? Oh, okay.
No, that's correct. It's in relation to the malicious use of domain names recommendation one.
Okay, so is the paper it'll be a report about the practicality of that, or what? Let's see.
This is Marika. Basically, initially the working group recommended an issue report, but the council decided to request a discussion paper instead from staff. So the approach we've taken is basically looking at the issues that the Registration Abuse Working Group outlined and the different subjects they identified, and basically use a discussion paper to highlight some of the questions and issues that would need to be considered if you go down the path of developing best practices. For example, questions as well, what does non-binding mean? And we've also looked at what best practices already are out there. So we've tried to compile already some best practices that have been developed either by ASEC or other groups. So the idea would be to put that paper out for community input, just to make sure that we've raised the right questions and we've covered the best practices that are out there, and also maybe asking people if there are other areas that people feel that should be considered as part of this effort. And hopefully we can recommend as well some next steps for the council to consider in taking this forward. So it's really trying to outline the different issues that would need to be considered in the context of such an initiative for the council to consider as part of its deliberations on next steps in relation to this issue.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, is there any other questions or comments on the outstanding recommendations? All right, that said, let's move on to the Who Is update, item number five, which Liz will give us an update on three items that we're working on: the study, the Who Is studies, the International Registration Data Working Group, and the Who Is service requirements report. So let me turn it over to Liz.
Thank you, Jeff. Hi, everyone. So first on the studies, just very quickly, I wanted to update everyone on where we are with the four studies. I think you recall that we've already begun the misuse study. Carnegie Mellon University is the research entity that is going to conduct that study. They've begun their work. On the last council call, the council approved two more studies, the proxy and privacy abuse study, and the pre-study survey on Reveal and Relay. And so staff is working on contracts with those firms. So we'll start those studies as soon as we finalize the contracts and the statements of work to reflect the details of, you know, what the council asked for on those. And then you recall there was study number two, the last study, that the council hasn't yet decided on. And this volunteer little group has revised that statement of work into a more non-hypothesis-based data-gathering study. And I'll be sending around a revision to the statement of work for that study for you in the next couple of days for you to review with your stakeholder groups and constituencies. And the plan was for a vote on that study at the June meeting. So we can anticipate that. That's the last one. And then assuming that study is approved, we would then proceed to negotiate a contract to do that study if the council wants to proceed. On the WHOIS service requirements, on the IRD, the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, I just wanted to mention that this group is continuing to work on the, and they have an interim report that they have already published that they're reviewing the comments on, and they're hoping to produce a draft final report for Singapore. I just wanted to mention it because the issue of internationalization of contact data is also relevant to the WHOIS service requirements report discussion, which we're going to continue next. So there is that interim report there are four models that have been proposed, and that working group is assessing the comments that have been made and hoping to issue a draft final report before Singapore. So on the, lastly, 5.3, the WHOIS service requirements report, you may recall that during the 28 April GNSO Council meeting, Aubrey Doria participated in the call and discussed some possible next steps that she and Chuck Gomes have suggested for the WHOIS service requirements report. Specifically, they suggested that a drafting team be formed to develop a survey to estimate the level of agreement that the conclusions and assumptions in the report actually have in the broader community. So that was proposed on the last call, and we wanted to continue that discussion today. So I'll turn it over to Jeff to lead that discussion. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Liz. Does anyone have any comments on that? You know, we had an update, as Liz said, on the last call from Avery. One important thing to remember on the WHOIS service requirements is that it is not a policy decision in the sense of, you know, what are we going to do with WHOIS as far as from privacy or other aspects. It's more of what do we need to do to put ourselves in the position of adopting whatever policy it is that we end up adopting in the coming months or years or however. There are some updates that do need to be made to WHOIS in order to implement any policy that we come out with. I do recall on the last call that the registry had said that this was a pretty important item to resolve or to get moving on, simply because it puts us in the position of doing that policy work or implementing any policies that may come out. So, Mary, you have a comment on that?
Yeah, just real brief, and as you know, Jeff, I have to jump off the call. I just wanted to say that I support the idea of a survey, and I think that's something that we should look at carrying forward. Thanks, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, Mary. And just a question for Liz. As far as putting out the survey and taking time, or drafting the survey, putting it out, taking time to analyze, from a resource, I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but from a resource perspective, is this something that you all have time to do? Is this something that if we do, we'll need to possibly push some other things aside?
I think that you would need to, first of all, form a drafting team to help guide us on how the survey should be constructed and who the survey should be targeted at. You know, is it everybody in the world? Is it, stakeholder groups and constituencies? You know, how should the survey be structured and managed? How should the questions be phrased? So I think there's community work involved. And I think Avery and Chuck actually alluded to this. How formal should the survey be? They had some thoughts about preferring a more formal survey with a more rigorous analysis. So I think we have to understand more about the community's expectations and desires. So that the drafting team they proposed, and I would second that. So the first point is there's going to be community tasking and bandwidth required, I think, to help us. And then I think the survey itself, the mechanics of the survey aren't hard, but staffing a drafting team, you know, and coming up with the questions is going to take, you know, a portion of a person's time to support what the drafting team proposes. And the amount of time is going to depend on what the drafting team proposes and over what period of time.
Thank you, Liz. So drawing upon that,
the side of hours, I would just say, you know, 4 or 5 hours for every hour that the drafting team actually works or meets.
Okay, that's actually a helpful guide. So that said, I'm inclined to start the drafting team or to kick it off in line with your suggestion. So unless I get any objections on the list, why don't we issue a call for a drafting team to see if they want to work on this issue? And then, although we do have some people that are want to raise some comments. So let me finish what I was going to say, and then I'll turn it over to comments. Would be to start a drafting team on this issue and just make it clear that, you know, some of the people that were heavily interested in this subject are not counselors, so the drafting team, as in line with previous drafting teams, does not necessarily have to be comprised solely of counselors. So let me turn that over to Mary and then to Tim. Mary?
Thanks, Jeff. So just a suggestion for continuity and consistency, that it might make sense for the chair of the working group to be asked to be on the drafting team. It just seems to make sense. So maybe in the call for volunteers, you or one of the staff could speak to whoever the chair is, or at least include that in the call. So just that suggestion, and I promise I will drop off the call now, much though I love all of you. So,
sorry, it's Liz. Mary, which the chair of which working group?
I thought we were talking about the IRD. Is that what we're
talking? Okay, thanks.
Yes, okay, that's a good idea, Mary. And hopefully they'll want to be on that as well. So let's, Tim?
But it's not just IRD that we're talking about, right? It's the entire services report, correct?
It's Liz, yes.
Correct.
Right, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I'll be sure it's on the same page. So what is the – I guess I'm just not clear on exactly what the drafting team will be doing. Is it trying to formulate what the survey needs to cover, or is it actually writing the survey itself? So you said we need to be very specific about what the drafting team is going to be doing so that the right people get involved.
I think the mechanics of the survey staff can do, like actually – sometimes the formulating of the questions is substantive and not just mechanics. So we would look to the drafting team to advise on anything substantive. You know, if the format of the questions becomes important, you know, that they be phrased in a neutral way or which questions get asked, like there's a lot of requirements potentially inferred there. So is there a question on each requirement? You know, I just think some of those things sound mechanical but have substantive implications that we would want to be guided by you.
Right. So having some, at least a few people who are familiar with being able to, you know, write surveys in neutral ways without being leading and that kind of thing would be helpful.
Yeah, but I think that's always helpful, really helpful, and I have really valued the input in previous sort of survey and constructs from, you know, experts in that way. But I think what's really important is people who understand these requirements, like which are at the protocol level, which might be at the service level, which would need to actually be defined in order to develop a new protocol, an extensible protocol could just accommodate over time. That could reduce or increase the number of specific requirements that get called out in the survey to ask people about. So I think it's more understanding some of the technical aspects of who is, frankly, and understanding that service requirements report, having really read it and understand what the purpose of it was and what the content of it is and what the each of those policy discussions that led to something being added to that report were, some history of the who is policy debate is, I think, the most valuable expertise that would help us. That's just off the cuff.
Great. Thanks, Liz.
Okay. So, Tim, you're good now?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, great. So we'll issue the call out to volunteers for this drafting group. And, again, just to emphasize that the drafting group does not necessarily need to be, it may be, but does not need to be counselors. And I know, for example, that Chuck Gomes will probably volunteer from the registries, and I'm sure Aubrey has an interest in it as well. So would encourage participation. Jonathan?
Jeff, just a very brief comment, thank you. Just to follow up on what Liz said there, when you issue your call for volunteers, it might be helpful to have a small preamble from Liz indicating the kind of help she really requires. Or skills and expertise. Sorry, skills and expertise is probably a better way of putting it.
Thank you, John.
A sentence or two for the council, too.
Yes.
Thank you. In fact, I could probably do it right now.
Well, no need to do it during this call. But, yes, Liz, thank you very much. I think, Jonathan, that's a very helpful suggestion and a really good idea. So with that, let me move on then to the next item, which is the community working groups. This is a kind of a subject that's been on our agenda for a number of different meetings, and we kind of usually gloss over it, but it's getting to be a very important subject and certainly one that we spend a lot of time debating on email. We have, just to remind everyone, we actually have formed a group of counselors to discuss these issues on community working groups, but I'm afraid the list has not been very active. And so Liz has sent around and should be, yes, it's on Adobe right now. It's not on the right-hand side on the notes, but it's actually in the agenda itself. Liz has crafted some language just to be kind of a straw man that this group can look at and discuss, which is basically some draft principles for cross-SOAC working groups. I don't know, Liz, if you want to just give a little preamble into that, and then we can discuss it if anyone's got any comments, or given our interest in time to move on to a number of other subjects, we could just, if everyone agrees, forward this on to that group to kind of flush out a little bit more. So, Liz, you want to just give like 1 or 2 minutes on this?
Sure, Jeff, thanks. You know, I pulled this together obviously because the activities of some recent cross-community working groups have raised some concerns. And because we have so many, we actually have at least 6 cross-community working groups underway right now, so it seemed really important to try to reach a common understanding of the role of these groups because we wouldn't want the value and effectiveness of the groups to be diminished in any way as a result of confusion or uncertainty or lack of consensus around the value or outcomes of those groups. So I tried to draft something that I thought would be high level. It's not etched in stone in any way. It just seemed like something that might be useful for groups to rely on as a starting place. And my thought was that The council or a subgroup could edit this or even throw it out and start from scratch if you'd prefer, but just as a starting place for some discussion so that we could ideally reach some consensus about how these groups and when these groups should be formed so that the groups at least that we have underway and there's so much community and staff effort that's been put into them continues to thrive. Thanks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute talking. Sorry about that. And it was really good what I said, and everyone missed it. Sorry about that. Glenn, we have a mailing list already set up for this group, and I believe there are a number of volunteers that are already on there from a number of the different stakeholder groups. So unless there's any discussion here, Jonathan, your hand is raised, but I don't know if that's left over from the previous.
Yeah, I re-raised it, Jeff. Thank you. I did re-raise it. First of all, I thought that Liz was extremely helpful to lay it out like that, just to get things going. I'm on that group, and I think the group still exists, and it would be great to get it moving. This is a good start. I have a question, though, and I wonder, to the extent that we are able to form consensus either within our subgroup of the council or the council, where does this go next? How do we I'm not sure if anyone's got any input as to it's all very well that we find a consensus, assuming we can, but what happens then? Is there some way we should be looking to Singapore to do something further or more broadly with that consensus? That's really, I'm just thinking where we go after that.
Okay, Jonathan, I think if we were to come to a consensus on these principles, then my guess is, and Liz or Marika or Margie could correct me, but I'm guessing these principles would then be put into the operating, the GNSO operating rules so that it would govern future discussions for future cross-working groups. I don't think that we'd have to look into transition or how it would apply to or if it would apply to existing working groups, because there are certain things in here that would go directly into a charter. And since those charters are already drafted for groups like the DISA group, which I can't remember what it stands for, but the basically Security and Stability Cross Working Group with the CCNSO and others. So I think that's something for the group to consider as well. But I see that Liz and Margie have their hands raised. So in the order that they were raised, I think Margie was first.
Thanks, Jeff. It's Margie. This was just a purely GNSO issue. I could see it going straight into the operating rules and procedures. But since, you know, looking at this broader than the GNSO Council, that, you know, at some point, if it gets approved at the council, or at least the drafting team, that you might want to circulate it to the other SOs and ACs to see if they buy off on the principles as well, so that it's not really just one, you know, group's buy into the concepts. Because you know, you can imagine a situation where if another group doesn't agree with the principles, that they'll just go and directly, you know, send a report to the board, and you may as a council want to keep that in mind as you're approving new cross constituency or cross working groups. So that's kind of my thought, is that you'd want to explore it further than just within the GNSO Council.
Yeah, I think, Margie, it's a really good point. And if this group is able to come up with something, we should circulate it to the other groups so that they could weigh in on it if they would like, or figure out whether it's something we could apply to existing groups or not. I do think it's a valuable exercise, and it would be fantastic to answer Jonathan's, one of his first questions. It would be fantastic if these principles could be agreed upon by the smaller group and then discussed in Singapore, maybe on the weekend before or even during the council meeting itself to kind of discuss applying those. Now, Jonathan, again, is this new one,
yeah,
or
the second? That was, I picked up what Margie had said, so that's great. What Margie said, because that's where I was coming from. I guess I'm slightly more ambitious and wondering if we can, just to try and set a target, if we can aim to both push the group and then the council to reach as close to consensus as we can ahead of Singapore, so that we then begin to, and ideally even circulate that consensus to other groups pre-Singapore for discussion. But maybe I'm running away with things. But I'm aware that what Margie highlights is the issue. So I guess I'll be looking to others to help us to how we bring other groups into this at Singapore, perhaps in our sort of cross-group meetings in Singapore, but that's certainly something we should target.
I think that's a great goal, and Jonathan, since you're on that group, I look to you or look forward to you pushing that issue with the group and trying to move it forward. I think that would be fantastic if that's something we could do. Ching and then Tim.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Jonathan, for taking the lead. And just a quick reminder, and I'm pretty sure that's been covered, but just for the record, is that I would like to personally just to make sure that this type of the principle or practice will maintain this at the higher level. Given we probably don't want to, as we observe from the recent cross-working group, the activities that those details or the procedures how the things would get done in those perspective cross-working groups should be left with those members to actually to decide. And also there could be issues of how would be the level of interaction with different ACs and SOs. For example, we have recently the experience with ALAC, with CCNSO, in the past we have experience with the GEC on the REC 6 and other working groups. So I just like to point out just to make sure that our work towards to setting out a procedure or actually a principle for the cross working group will be maintained at a higher level. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ching. Let me go on to Tim.
I just want to make sure that we're careful to get everyone's participation and input and whatever that wants to give it. There's a lot going on between now and Singapore, and probably a lot going on in Singapore around the new GTLDs. And so I'm just concerned that some won't be paying a lot of attention to anything else in the meantime until that's kind of out of the way. And so I just want to make sure we don't take silence necessarily as acquiescence or agreement to anything, and that we're just careful here until, the new GTLD hype kind of settles down a little bit.
I think, Tim, that's a good point. I know people will be distracted, especially with what's going on the next 10 days or so. So why don't we'll put this on the agenda for the next meeting on June 9th. And see if there's any progress that's been made, and maybe have a report given by someone on that drafting team on an update, so that everyone's aware of what's going on, and so it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Jonathan, if you could push it a little bit over the next 3 weeks or so, maybe since you have been running with it on this call, and there is no chair now, so in the absence of a chair, if I could ask you to try to stimulate the conversation and then give us an update for the next call?
I will do that, Jeff, and I've heard and noted Tim's note of caution and why that should be the case, so I understand. Yeah, bye.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Anyone else with any comments on the community working groups? Okay, then I'm going to turn it over to Julie to talk about the global outreach recommendations. Where we are on that, we did approve a motion last council meeting, and so she's going to discuss where we are with that and the next steps.
Thank you very much, Jess. This is Julie Hedlund. So at the last council meeting, it was passed on to the, the public forum had closed. There were a few comments in the public forum, and the GNSO Council asked the OSC and its work team to look at those comments and decide if any action needed to be taken. Philip Shepard has since notified the Council that he didn't feel that the comments that were received required any changes to the outreach recommendations. And so the next step would be for the Council to seek volunteers for the charter drafting team to implement the first of the recommendations in the report, and that is for the development of an outreach task force. In particular, the recommendations say that the GNSO Council should manage the development of the outreach task force through the creation of a drafting team to develop the outreach task force charter. The charter shall include procedures for member recruitment, application, selection, terms, and term limits. The charter should also set goals for the completion of the membership selection process, establishment of a meeting schedule, and participation guidelines. The charter should establish an initial term for the outreach task force of 2 years. After this period, a review shall be conducted to review the success of the outreach task force initiatives, and if deemed successful, the outreach task force charter could be extended annually. So, as mentioned, the first step is for the development of a charter drafting team, and certainly staff can assist in sending out an invite to the council members for that drafting team, if that's the way that you would like us to proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Chain your hands up. I don't know if it was leftover or if it's new.
Sorry, Jeff, I'm just lowering my hands. Right.
Okay. Olga?
Thanks, Jeff. As chair of the working team that drafted that document, I would like to volunteer for that new drafting team.
Thank you, Olga. I think you make an excellent member of the new drafting team. So I think I'm not seeing any hands raised. So what I would say is that, as Julie had recommended, I think staff should initiate a call for the other members of this drafting team. Certainly Olga should be included on that. And, in fact, I would probably venture to say that she would be an excellent initial chair of that that drafting team, although I'll let the drafting team choose their own chair. But again, I would like to I'd like to point out that these teams that we're creating, because we're creating a bunch of them, should not be only counselors, that we should encourage members of the community. In fact, we should do some global outreach to get these members of this global outreach drafting team. So with that said, Julie, I think it's a good recommendation if we could have staff issue the call for this drafting team, along with the preamble of what the drafting team is there to do.
Great. Thank you. This is Julie Hedlund. So we'll get an invite out very quickly, and both to the council and to the liaison groups, and as you say, encourage outreach to members of the community who may not otherwise be involved to ensure that we have broad participation in the drafting team.
Great. And Olga, can I, unless anyone objects, but I don't think anyone will, can I ask you to take at least the initial lead from the council level to work on this?
Sure, of course.
Great. Any other comments on this? I think this is a really important initiative, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the outcome of this is. Okay, seeing no other comments and making sure people are still awake, let's talk about the UDRP, and I'm going to turn this over to Margie, but before Margie speaks, I want to, and I know she's going to talk about the webinar, but I want to thank Margie and the work of ICANN staff and the small drafting team we had set up, because I think the webinar that Margie's going to talk about was just fantastically done. I think the participation we had was superb and probably the best attendance we've ever had at a policy webinar. And just want to thank Margie, and then I'll turn it over to you, Margie.
Thanks, Jeff. It was quite a work to task to get that webinar put together, but I do want to thank the drafting team because I think they did a terrific job of helping me figure out how it should be run, who should be invited, and really I think it was an example of providing a very well-balanced approach to an issue, particularly in advance of drafting an issue report. One of the things as staff we always have difficulties with is gathering the data that's needed to really inform the issue report, and I think the webinar did exactly that. We had about 18 speakers, so it was a tremendous amount of speakers in a two-hour period, and they were only given 5 minutes to speak, yet they were able to concisely point out their issues with the UDRP and whether a PDP should be conducted. And we were able to get speakers from the entire spectrum of folks that really have information and knowledge on the UDRP. We had every single UDRP provider online, including the ones in Asia when it was a very difficult time for them. We had compliance. Khalil Rashid participated. We had a registrar. We had complainants and respondents. And we also had academics on the call. So really, it was just a broad range of perspectives, including a lot of faces that you typically don't see at ICANN meetings, which I always appreciate because these folks with expertise in the UDRP came and into our world to explain their viewpoint. So, I got a lot of great information, and also in anticipation of the webinar, the drafting team had helped us put together a questionnaire that went to each of the UDRP providers to get just some hard facts that we can reference into the issue report. And I'm happy to report that all of the providers provided a response, and I'm now in the process of collating that information and going through the transcript of the webinar to pick out, the things to talk about in the issue report. With respect to themes, a couple themes just I'll highlight. It seemed like across the spectrum of speakers, there was a viewpoint that although the UDRP is not perfect, it seems to work. And there were a lot of folks that said that they would prefer that the policy not get, addressed. They're worried that if it gets opened up, it'll make it more complicated and less effective. Although there were some folks that suggested that if something was to be looked at, it would be the process and the procedures as opposed to the actual words of the policy. And so this seemed to come across from various perspectives. And then some folks also suggested that it might be better to wait to conduct a PDP until there's some experience and lessons learned from the URS and the new GTLD program. So those are kind of the themes I seem to pick up. I'm going to be looking at the transcripts in more detail to put together the issues report. The issue report. I am on schedule to publish that this month. I'm hoping to do that, around May 30th or May 31st. And then I'll open a public comment period. I plan to open a public comment period for a little more than 30 days unless you guys think that I should provide more time. I was thinking that if I publish on the 31st of May that I would give the closing of the public comment period on July 8th, given the travel to Singapore and the U.S. holiday for the July 4th. I figured that might be a good date. If I can get feedback from the council on that. The other thing is that the drafting team will be convening shortly to develop the schedule and agenda for the session that's going to be conducted in Singapore on the UDRP. We've got I've requested a two-hour block on the UDRP for Wednesday from 8:30 to 10:30, and I think that's where it will be. And so that's kind of the next steps from the drafting team perspective to help identify speakers and format for that session. With that, the last thing I wanted to point out is we're taking a different approach, I've mentioned this before, than what's currently in the Annex A. We've decided to, at the session of council, to do a preliminary issue report, do the public comment period, and then issue the final issue report after the closing of the public comment period. and that would mean that the final issue report would be issued at the end of July, given the schedule that I've just suggested. And so with that, any questions?
So, Margie, this is Jeff. With one of the things you said, I was on the UDRP call and totally agree that there was definitely a feeling on the call of almost all the speakers that from a substantive standpoint, most of the speakers didn't want to see any real changes to the policy because it works. But I can't remember if you said this, but it does seem like from a procedural standpoint, each of the providers and the registrar representative and each of the speakers seem to have some things from a procedural viewpoint that they did want to see changed. Is that kind of an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I think each speaker essentially said, you know, we don't want you to, or, you know, it'd be best not to mess with it, but if you're going to look at it, and then they would raise, you know, several issues, most of them related to process or procedure as opposed to the language of the policy itself.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's definitely consistent with what I got out of that call as well. Anyone else from the council that was on the call that have any comments? Is everyone still there? I mean, you're still on Adobe, so.
Yes.
So, okay. We're moving well here. Is anyone? Okay. No one's got any comments. We can move on to the next item. Thank you, Margie, and we'll look forward to the drafting team meeting and discussing the format and speakers for the session in Singapore. And we also look forward to getting the preliminary issues report. Oh, you did have a question on whether the public comment period open till July 8th presents any issues. I will note it is pretty close to the American July 4th holiday. Is there anyone on the council that has any thoughts as to whether that's a good or a bad time? Should there be more time to comment? That would probably be close to, 45 days or maybe closer to 40-day comment period?
Yeah, I was thinking of the next week, which would put it at the 15th, and that did seem like 45 days. I don't mind doing that, but I just wanted to make sure the council would, you know, be comfortable with that if that's the direction you'd like us to go.
I think given the American holiday, given the fact that usually a week or so after an ICANN meeting, most people, you know, need a break, it probably makes sense to do the 45-day period.
Okay. I think that's great. I'll put that down and plan on that.
Okay, and as you said also, there's a lot of people outside the normal ICANN channels that will be awaiting this report and want to comment on it. So I think 45 days is a good period.
Great, thank you.
Okay, another item. Item 9 is we actually probably don't even need a discussion on this call, but Stefan had circulated an idea of moving the GNSO Council calls instead of every 3 weeks to every 4 weeks or roughly once a month. The reason why I'm going to kind of gloss over this and go on to the next subject is because it's not really an issue for the next several months. We have a call that's 3 weeks from now, which we really can't change anyway. And then the meeting after that's in Singapore. There's only one meeting in July that's scheduled for the Council, and that is 4 or 5 weeks after the Singapore meeting. That would be July 21st. There is no meeting scheduled for August, which would bring us to September. So it's really not an issue until we start up the calls in September. But just so everybody thinks about it, the reason we went to every 3 weeks, I understand, is because the agendas became too full and started to go way over 2 hours. So I'd like to move on to the next item, but if anyone has any thoughts on whether to do if anyone's against trying every 4 weeks, then my recommendation will be to start this every 4 weeks in the September timeframe, starting with our first meeting in September. And again, hearing no reaction. Wow, I could get a lot of things through the council now.
Jeff?
Yes.
Hello?
This yes.
is Jamie Wagner.
Hi, Jamie.
I would approve moving to 4 weeks, given the fact that the last meetings have been very rapid. So I would suggest also that we can give maintain some meetings to be confirmed. I mean, we could maintain the regularity, close regularity, closer, more frequent, but with meetings to be confirmed if they were by the chair. That's my suggestion.
Okay, thank you, Jamie. Again, this probably doesn't become an issue of until September, but and let me ask the question too that we need to. I don't believe we need an actual vote to change the schedule, but if we do, I'm sure ICANN staff will correct me on that. So what I will do is I'll talk to Stefan and Mary, and we'll try to get a new schedule out that starts with the September calls, the teleconferences. So there's no changes to the schedule up into or through September. So we will work on that. We'll send out a note to the council. Okay. Now we're into any other business, and I will note that Mary has sent around, I believe it was Mary or it might have been Glenn, has sent around a schedule for the weekend sessions in Singapore. They start currently, are scheduled to start at noon on Saturday, local Singapore time, and which is a change. Usually it starts at 9 a.m. I will also note that there is scheduled or will most likely be scheduled a board GAC session on new GTLDs on that Sunday afternoon. And so we need to discuss at least at the scheduling whether or not to have a conflicting meeting of the council at the same time, recognizing that many members of the council will probably like to see the GAC board meeting. But that, of course, depends if that meeting is open or not. So over the next few days to week or so, we are going to try to find out whether that GAC board meeting is open. And if it is open, then we're going to see how the council feels about or how that will impact scheduling changes, recognizing that people would like to probably like to go to that meeting. We also do need to come up with topics to talk about with the CCNSO and the board and the GAC. And so right now, normally our GAC meeting is scheduled for that Sunday afternoon. Obviously, with this meeting, we're going to have to reschedule that, and it looks like we'll probably reschedule that to Wednesday. But again, that's kind of still up in the air. We will let everyone know in the next couple weeks. And is there any other comments?
Jess, this is Glenn.
Yes, Glenn, please.
It is more or less certain that the meeting with the GNSO and the GAC will be on Wednesday morning from 11 to 12:30 because the GAC has let us know that they cannot meet with the GNSO on Sunday due to the board meeting with the GAC.
Okay.
And that slot has been reserved because it has been very difficult to find another time. Currently, it is the only other meeting up against it is the DNSSEC workshop, which goes on all morning.
Right. Okay, thank you, Glenn. So what we need to think about for the next meeting and over the next few weeks are what topics we want to discuss with the CCNSO, the GAC, and the board. I'd really like to – we're going to try something – we're going to try to get the CCNSO information beforehand so that it becomes a much more productive meeting than our normal lunches, although the last lunch was actually pretty relatively productive. So if you have any ideas, please submit them to the list. I want to thank Mary for working very hard, Mary and Glenn, for working very hard on the schedule for Singapore. And if you have any comments, please make it on the list. Is there anything else anybody wants to cover? Well, hearing none, I will end the call 12 minutes early. Is there anyone else? Nope. All right. Thank you, everyone. We'll talk next on June 9th. Thank you.
Congratulations, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, everybody.